Maybe you can introduce the next item. Ms. McCann.
Item 12. This item is titled Status of Water Board Programs and Regulations to Protect Water Quality from Cannabis Cultivation Facilities. Sorry, something strange is going on my screen, but it will provide an overview of programs and activities of the State Water Resources Control Board's Office of Enforcement and the work that's going on in other regional water boards, specifically Region 1 and North Coast and Region 5 Central Valley, to address the detrimental water quality and habitat impacts from cannabis cultivation facilities. And we have, we're fortunate to have Aaron Mustaine from the Office of Enforcement here today to make this presentation and lay some foundation. We're all learning what's expected of our region in the near future. Aaron is a water resource control engineer and investigator from the Office of Enforcement. She'll also comment on what the assessment to date has been about the needs in the Central Coast region for addressing cannabis cultivation impacts.
I did bring some of our outreach materials to share with you, and I also prepared a write-up, which I believe you've already received, and I didn't want to own any of the typos. They would be mine if you noticed them. If you didn't notice them, just kidding.
I was hoping we were done with this technology challenges for the day.
No
harm. Just
I'd have to drive.
Wouldn't be good.
I could start with introducing myself, but Ms. McCann already introduced me, but I'll just say good morning, good afternoon, there. Members of the board.
Yeah.
My name is Erin Mustaine, and as Ms. McCann said, I am a senior water resource control engineering specialist in the Cannabis Enforcement Unit in our State Water Board's Office of Enforcement. And I'd also like to thank Interim Executive Officer Ms. McCann for inviting me to speak today and present our program. So the cannabis pilot project began with a budget change proposal, which went into effect on July 2014. And our boards were allocated 11 positions, the water boards, and there were seven positions that went to the Department of Fish and Wildlife. The way they were ultimately distributed, we created a unit in our Central Valley Regional Water Board's Reading office of four, and we created a unit in our North Coast Regional Board office, also a unit of four. And then at the State Board, we have three positions. My position, our staff counsel, our senior staff counsel, Yvonne West, and I have a colleague that is, I've reclassified to engineering geologist. So there's the three of us in the Office of Enforcement. And collectively, the water boards and the Department of Fish and Wildlife developed a strategic plan, which was approved by our executive director, Tom Howard, in July of 2014. And our pilot project, which is essentially complete, was focused in Northern California, and we targeted the areas north of Highway 20. So our goal has been to protect watersheds that contain endangered and threatened species habitat from being harmed by cannabis cultivation. And those types of, we've been looking at protecting Chinook, Coho, and Steelhead in the North Coast. And our newer goal is to fulfill the recent legislation by expanding our pilot project statewide. And so this is a list of the environmental damage that we've seen on site. And I myself have conducted 37 inspections over the last year and can attest that there's been a lot of earth movement. I like to call it recreational bulldozing, just no control for erosion, no best management practices. Roads have been run right through stream crossings with no culverts in place. The culverts that I've seen are usually severely undersized or poorly installed. A lot of clearing of timberlands to construct grow pads. There's been bulk storage of fertilizer, and it's just a massive amount of fertilizer stored out in the open without any containment whatsoever. I've seen it as bad as it being stored in the middle of a creek. Trash and hazardous material, sometimes it's hazardous waste, landfill, essentially unauthorized land or waste piles, I guess you would call them, and human waste haphazardly disposed of, and a lot of illegal diversions. And so I'm gonna go through and I'll just show you some pictures. Some of these are for sites that I've been on myself. So in this case, the one on the right with the trash cans, that was one trash pile at the site that I went to. But you can see this is very typical of what we're seeing. And then when we're interviewing a lot of these growers, their response is, I'm green, I'm organic, I'm, you know, very pro-environment. And then, you know, we're photographing, well, you know, open latrines and garbage piles. So the top left and the bottom right are two sites that we found. That was in our Reading office, took those photos, and you could see lots of fresh soil and steep slopes, steep fill prisms. And then the bottom left is one that I took on a site that I have issued a CAO for. They drove that road through four streams without crossings. And so the water is not from recent drains. I believe that standing water is because of the, you know, hydro modification that occurred from the building that road. Okay, and so here's unauthorized use. I should get back to my notes too, because I don't want to forget what I want to, you know, be sure to mention. So we have the top left is a water, it's essentially a lined reservoir a makeshift reservoir that they've created. And then we have another type of water diversion take on the bottom. And then the one on the right is just piping. And that we see that almost on every site where you just see hoses, and our responsibility, we chase the pipes and try and find where they're diverting from. So, and then I wanted to mention another common thing that the growers like to use are these big water bladders. And they're a particular menace because they're not only a problem with illegal storage of water, they also love to leak and love to pop, and oftentimes are precariously located on the top of a hill upslope from a water course. So they cause both water rights staff and water quality staff some heartburn. So And now I'm going to talk to you about how what the strategies we have employed over the last year to address some of these environmental impacts. And so I'll go over all of these in more detail in the pursuing slides, but the main strategies is we've kind of had a four-pronged approach to our program: multi-agency coordination, regulation, enforcement, and outreach and education. So with very few exceptions, the Water Board staff don't go out and inspect these sites by themselves. Even on consent, or even with consent of the growers, we take our CDFW colleagues out, the wardens and the biologist. They have authorities that we don't have. They have the ability to enforce trash a bit more easily. They may see violations of their code. And so we have a partnership, and we've been strategically identifying watersheds to target in partnership with CDFW, and we take out the regional boards, my office, and the Division of Water Rights, and our Fish and Game colleagues. We also, Fish and Game, as the law enforcement arm, they have the ability to do deconfliction, so they can work with local law enforcement and make sure that there's not a criminal enforcement case going on and that we're gonna impede in any way. So this program doesn't work. I mean, we can't work in isolation, and I can't overstate the importance of our multi-agency coordination. We also bring out county health, you know, the COOPAs and county code enforcement, because they may find, I mean, some of the issues we see are beyond our scope in the water code. So just to kind of go through who has really been involved over the last year. Though the Division of Water Rights wasn't specifically named in the strategic plan, on every major watershed effort that we've done in the North Coast region, we've brought out the division with us to address the illegal diversions. We've brought out the Regional Water Board, water quality staff as well, and then Office of Enforcement. CDFW, we bring out wardens. They act as security, but they also look into criminal issues, and then their biologists are looking for violations of the lake bed stream alteration agreements, if there are any. Lots of times there's not, and other violations of their code. And then with the counties, we go out with the sheriff's department, code enforcement, environmental health, and we also work with the local DAs as well, and they know. We've developed relationships with them because sometimes there's both criminal and civil issues going on. So that was our multi-agency outreach, and I'm going to cover our regulation. There's two general orders in place. The North Coast Regional Water Board chose to issue a waiver of waste discharge requirements and general 401 certification. So that's one order, and it encompasses both. And then the Central Valley Regional Board issued just general waste discharge requirements. So what they have in common is they have a tiered structure. So they have tier 1, 2, and 3. They do define those tiers slightly differently. They also have a third-party program where a third party can work with the growers and help them comply and submit things on the grower's behalf. They have standard conditions. One thing that is different for Region 1 and 5 is that Region 5 does not have a Tier 0. For Region 1, it wouldn't work without a Tier 0. There's just too many grows, and so they defined the universe that they just can't get to, and so that's the Tier 0, and they do not have to apply for coverage. And like I said, the parameters for the tiers are different. Region 1 allows larger growth sites and steeper slopes, I guess you could say. But the nuances are in the write-up that I provided to you. The most recent estimate of the growers in Northern California that I've heard is 50,000. So, and I believe it, because I've mapped some watersheds, or either mapped myself or directed staff to map watersheds, and there was one watershed where it looked like everybody and their brother was growing. It was almost like, well, everybody else and all my other neighbors are doing it, so I might as well do it, because literally every parcel had a grow on it. So this is what I'm probably most confident speaking to. I am in the Office of Enforcement. I did not write or wasn't really involved in the waiver writing process. I did review them, but on the enforcement side, I have been going out on the field a lot, and we are taking a variety of enforcement depending on the severity of the environmental issues that we're seeing. And so, you know, it may start, you know, it may be a small grow where there's not a lot going on, and a notice of violation may be appropriate if the discharger is in compliance with the county code and there's not a lot of water quality issues. And 13267 investigative orders can be combined with a notice of violation or with a cleanup and abatement order, because we're always asking for reports, and sometimes we don't have all the information that we need. So, and then we've been issuing administrative civil liabilities. Mainly Region 5 has issued 2 civil liabilities, and our Division of Water Rights has settled a case. So I'll go into the specifics, because I think most people are mainly interested in the formal enforcement action, right? So if you go to the next slide. So one of our biggest cases, this one went before the regional board, I believe in December of 2014, and the regional board decided to impose the full amount, the $297,400 liability, and this was against both the property owner and the contractor who did the work. And so the contractor did the work knowing that he needed to get permits and he didn't have any of those, and so they were held jointly liable. And we like to do that in the Office of Enforcement. We can and we do exercise that authority. And the other case, we did settle a case with Bulk Water Hauler for $35,000. The penalties in the water rights world are they're not as steep as they are in the water quality world, but this was a huge case. It required a lot of staff time, and it was a huge win. Just to give you an idea, the water haulers were taking water from the Hay Fork in Trinity County, and they were hauling it as far as Mad River in Humboldt County. So, and then there's another case on the next slide. And this case, we're in the public comment period for a settlement. This discharger developed property, moved a lot of dirt, and there was a lot of sedimentation to essentially build a wall to protect him from being seen by law enforcement. And, you know, from my colleague, Yvonne West, she's an attorney, she found that it was an interesting case. The gentleman, the owner, decided to plead the fifth, and he refused to name the lessee of the property. And the violations were both Clean Water Act and Water Code violations and Basin Plan violations. So the proposed agreement is that's being publicly noticed is for $100,000. So that's a settled amount. And then in the write-up, I misstated that the Central Valley imposed a $200,001 penalty, but that was what was in the complaint, and so the settled amount is $100,000. So, all right, and so there's potentially 50,000 grow sites, and there's a variety of issues at these sites, and so what we really need to reach out to as many people as possible. So we've developed many outreach materials, fact sheets, brochures, flyers, and mailers. One thing we did is we mailed 15,000 flyers to all of the licensed contractors in Northern California, and so that was basically putting them on notice that we can go after them too. So that's actually probably our first step in enforcement. They can't say that they didn't get notice. So, and we just have issued or handed out thousands of brochures. We've developed a BMP best management practices for cannabis cultivation, and these are going to dispensaries and people who sell equipment and nurseries, and they're distributing them. They're currently translated in, there's materials translated into Spanish, Hmong, Bulgarian, and Russian. And then we help, we're holding events. Region 1 it has about 20, 25 events this month, workshop, basically every day they're doing a workshop in a different area to get people to enroll under their waiver. We participate in roundtables. I participate in the Santa Cruz Code Enforcement Roundtable. I go to conferences to speak in different, you know, basically and point out these environmental issues that we're finding. There's actually a lot of, I guess, naivete about the industry. There's people that think it's essentially greener than it is. Chris Kerrigan, Yvonne, and I have been, and so have Region Board staff, we've been interviewed by numerous newspapers. Chris Kerrigan has done radio interviews, and we also do press releases when we issue enforcement to send a message to the community that we are taking enforcement. So I think the next slides are, these are examples of the outreach that we've done. So the one on the left is our flyer, and I took a shot of the one in Spanish. And the one on the right is guidance that our sister agency, the Department of Pesticide Regulations, created on our behalf. And it tells growers what they can and can't do in regards to pesticides. They have to, because pesticides are regulated under FIFRA, which is a federal law. It's the fungicide, insecticide. The Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, Rodenticide Act. They can't violate any. They have to be really careful because it's marijuana cultivation is federally illegal. So you can't use any pesticide that's registered by U.S. EPA or Department of Pesticide Regulations in cannabis cultivation. And then, again, we developed best management practices. This was in concert with our regional board, our Central Valley Regional Water Board, for both, there's some water supply and water quality issues. And both of the regional boards require that best management practices be implemented to be enrolled under their waiver. And the moving dirt flyer is the one that I said we mailed out 1,500 copies to all the licensed contractors in Northern California. So a list of our, this is my bragging rights. So over the last year, we've conducted more than 120 inspections with CDFW in six counties, Shasta, Tehama, Butte, Humboldt, Trinity, and Mendocino. Like I said, I've been on 36 myself. We've documented many water rights and water quality violations, lots of unauthorized diversion and use violations. We have served 50 detailed inspection reports with recommendations and the potential violations. So that's kind of the first step in getting them to return to compliance. And we have our waiver programs in both Region 1 and 5. We've had a substantial increase in compliance. We went out to Sproul Creek, was one of our first watersheds to target in Humboldt County, and then both CDFW and our Division of Water Rights were inundated with applications. There was a lot of just people didn't know what they needed to do, and so there's definitely a lot of positive reaction for the people. There are people that want to work with us. I mean, we in Region 1, I was told there's currently 20 enrollees, and their deadline for enrollment hasn't happened yet. And Region 5 has 10 enrollees, but a lot of the counties in Region 5 have banned cultivation, and their waivers is written such that if the county doesn't allow it, you can't enroll in the permit. So there are people that are enrolling in this program, and they're submitting their statement of use to our Division of Water Rights to tell us what water they're using, if they have riparian rights, and there are people that are trying to get appropriative water rights as well. So our next steps are to expand the program statewide and continue doing our inspections, and we're looking at watersheds with significant salmon and steelhead habitat, And so that's actually kind of why I'm here. Region 3 is our next kind of target area. And so we're looking to expand our pilot program here first because of the special habitat that you have in this region. And then, of course, continuing to enforce, or actually, there's a big project to enforce the enrollment process. And so that's now that deadline's going to hit in February, and Region 5, their deadline was immediate. We're now trying to figure out, like, how are we going to encourage people to enroll and enforce if they don't? And so that's a priority for us, is to enforce the non-filers for the waiver and the general WDRs. And so I just included a map to highlight that your region does have some cultivation occurring and some watersheds with Chinook, coho, and a lot of steelhead. So, and with that, I will open it up to questions.
Thank you for your presentation. I look at my right, Mr. Johnston.
So I know there's been a lot of interest in Santa Cruz, Monterey, San Luis Obispo, San Benito County, mm-hmm. as counties as well as some of the cities work on their ordinances to comply with the state law. I'm assuming that the focus then is on outside grows rather than inside grows. Because those are the ones that have the watershed implications. Is that correct?
It has been correct. I'm going to start doing some research. I mean, there's really one of me right now. I'm hiring the other person in my unit. But as far as the technical standpoint, I'm interested in the implications of where that wastewater from the indoor grows is going, but I just haven't been able to grapple it. I mean, I have, you know, so yeah. I am interested.
It's in rural areas, I'm guessing it goes into at best a septic system. At worst,
They don't, you know, down I've been told that the indoor grows they generate kind of more tailwater or wastewater. I haven't seen a lot of tailwater at the outdoor sites, and they like to recycle their water. They right. also use actually pretty sustainable water practices because they're using an average of 6 gallons per day. So a lot of them are doing drip or they're doing manual irrigation.
Yeah, I think a lot of the indoor is hydroponic, so that would generate some tailwater. So, and then I'm assuming that in terms of focusing on steelhead habitat, you're looking at the coast ranges, at the Santa Cruz Mountains, at the Big Sur Mountains, at the Diablo and Gabilon ranges, which are steelhead habitat. Is that correct in our region?
We haven't had that discussion.
Okay.
And do you? So there's kind of two sides of the question. So it's easy in the counties that choose and cities that choose not to outright ban it. They've given us a foot in the door. The ones that have chosen to ban the practice completely have made it a criminal activity. And the water boards does not have a criminal arm. And so we're not going to prioritize the counties and cities that ban it. There may be some cleanup that needs to be done, but that is not our highest priority. So that's one thing. So we're looking at that as a priority, who's going to work with us. And then the second is, where is the precious, where is the threatened and endangered habitat? And I have started with Santa Cruz County because they have reached out to me, and they want us to come to their county.
Right. And I know that Monterey County is working on an ordinance. And mm-hmm. do you know anything about the status of San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara, San Benito, Santa Clara counties?
I did not check on that. I did note that the wood bill, the trailer bill to fix the March 1st deadline has gone through, and they anticipate that the governor is going to sign it this month. And since today's the 28th, I assume that means January. So hopefully then the cities and the counties can take a step back and a breather and think, do we want to ban this or do we want to come up with ordinances?
And the new deadline is going to be in the
I don't know that. I think they, my understanding is they're removing the deadline.
Okay.
Because that wasn't the intention, was to.
And do you have a sense of the scope of the growing going on in Region 3?
I do not have a sense of the scope, no. I had planned to have numbers for you today, and I failed at mapping all of the watersheds. It takes time.
And that's basically you're doing the kind of the 20,000 foot method, the aerial mapping. Or?
I can tell you what I do when I do map the watersheds. So I use ArcMap, and I basically look at your watershed boundaries, the legal boundaries. And then I take the county parcels and I, you know, unite them. And then I go in and look for the grows. At this time, it's a manual process.
Okay, so that'll show anything that's not roofed, essentially.
Correct. Yeah, and I look for reservoirs as well in large cleared areas because we're still concerned about water quality. That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, and so in terms of the ground level, you know, talking to the folks who have been talking to the folks who are following this process, you're basically in this region just talking to Santa Cruz County right now.
Correct.
Thank you.
And your board. So this is, we're initiating this, yeah.
Thank you.
Dr. Hunter?
Thank you. Thank you very much for the update. And so, given we don't use the word fail, we use the word try, and given that you intend to create more of an understanding of where the potential sites are for Region 3, when do you envision that occurring? Do you think that's something, how far are you into it, or have you not started it, and when do you project that you might have that for us?
Can I get back to you on that?
Yeah.
I think that's a fair
sure.
question, but I want to
sure.
I want to map some watersheds and do a kind of extrapolate how long it takes me over, you know, over the
yeah,
number of watersheds I plan to map.
Yeah,
and again, I will focus on the ones that have habitat.
So looking at the work
habitat.
You have already done, just generally, how long does it take to map out the watersheds?
It depends on the size. I would say 4 to 8 hours.
Yeah. Okay.
Each.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and then depending on how many are within the region, which
correct.
Is a lot.
I think I identified 12 that are of interest that have habitat in Santa Cruz. But of course, talking to Santa Cruz, it'll be you know asking them what they think.
Mm-hmm.
They may have a difference of opinion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, but I'll also be using our basin plan or your basin plan. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
We're partners, so
yeah.
It's our
yeah.
basin plan. Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay, good. That gives us an idea, but things are rolling. So
yeah.
That is.
I figured you, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No.
I just figured that you'd have some good ideas for things that I should be working on and that I can take it back with me and get rolling on it. So,
okay.
Yeah. But Ms. McCann had already pushed me in that direction. And I had, yeah, like I said, that was a goal of mine that I didn't meet today. So.
Okay, we understand. There's a lot to do. All right, thank you.
Mr. Young?
Hi. So I think I heard you say that if a county makes it illegal to cultivate marijuana, that you're not going to pursue any effort in that county because you don't have the criminal violation hook?
We don't have a law, unlike DTSC, CAL FIRE, and CDFW, the water boards don't have
but
peace
Fish
officers.
But Fish and Wildlife does.
Correct, and they have two programs. That's
right.
I'm glad you brought this up, because CDFW has broken up their enforcement into two arms. So they have the marijuana enforcement team, and those are the people that go in and eradicate, and that they'll continue to eradicate. They do the trespass grows, and they do the illegal high commercial grows, felony grows. I work with the watershed enforcement team. All our focus is on protecting critical habitat and municipal water sources. So when I go out with those wardens, they were tasked under this pilot project to work with us to create a regulatory structure to get some of these people, you know, doing the right thing.
So I just want to make sure then that in a county where it's illegal to cultivate,
mm-hmm.
if there are still operations going on that are impacting water quality or water rights, your office is still going to do something about it.
Well, the division will do something for sure if they're illegally taking water, but they're going to, it's going to be it's a criminal matter. There's going to be arrests made. They're not going to be able to enroll under our program. They're going to be eradicated. I mean, I assume that all the plants are going to get eradicated. So
just by a different part of the State Water Board.
It's just not our intention to undermine the county's criminal authority. I mean, their authority to regulate their, or to ban these, the cultivation. We're not going to, I think there's been confusion because Region 1, are you talking about Region 1?
No, not in particular.
Okay. So Region 1 doesn't explicitly say that if you're in violation of an ordinance, you can't enroll under our waiver. Region 5 explicitly states that. And so what we say, I mean, it's hard for me to take the board kind of message when we have almost two messages going on, but the Office of Enforcement has said when it's a criminal matter, it's a criminal matter, it's not our matter. So we're not going to, as far as I know, we're not planning on engaging in eradication or that type of.
Thank you. Just so I'm clear, so you're not prioritizing simply because groves are located in a county or an area, municipality, where it's banned.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that if you identify a water quality issue, you would go forward if it rose to the level, if it met your criteria. So you could issue a notice of violation. You could follow that pathway you just outlined for us.
We can. Region 5 has done that in specific watersheds, but it's completely an enforcement issue. It becomes a cleanup and abatement issue.
Right.
We can pursue civil penalties,
right.
Which may hurt, you know, in some cases may hurt the grower more than a criminal. If they just get pled out and they end up doing probation, hitting them with a civil liability might be more painful for them.
Mm-hmm.
But that's our goal of this program, is to target as many growers as possible, do the outreach, and get them to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And where the counties have out and out banned it, they've made it completely illegal, and that kind of, it's just counter to the program that we're trying to establish.
Got it.
Is that closer to?
Yeah, that helps.
Yeah, you're kind of hoping, though, that by making it illegal that they're not going to be doing it. Right?
No, the counties are hoping that. What
yeah,
they're hoping
well, but-
is they're hoping that it'll move to humble is really, I think, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that.
Okay.
I do not have any.
All right. My, I have one.
I have one more comment when you're done.
Yeah. You know, I noticed that you presented slides on outreach, educational components, little flyers, multilingual. But, you know, and I understand the role of enforcement. So what is being shown here are the bad actors, but there must be some good actors out there.
Yeah, there are.
So
yes. I will say Browns Creek, the Browns Creek watershed in Trinity County, I was conducted all the inspections that we did in that watershed. I was on all the, and I think we had one that was a problem, but they were already working to come into compliance. They had basically removed their BMPs, their wattles, and set them aside for access, but they were going to put them in place before the rainy season. So Browns Creek was definitely a success. We were thanked for going in there. There's a lot of people using the water, but in a drought, people are kind of vying for the water. And so there's, and then I have a cleanup and abatement order out, and they've already started, they've completed their emergency or interim erosion control plan. They've already put those in as much as they could, put erosion controls into place. Sproul Creek, like I said, we had a lot of people submit their permits to both CDFW and the water boards. So,
yeah, that's what I was thinking is one way to inspire good management practice is to show good examples. And in other words, having also pictures illustrating, okay, this is what you don't want to do, but this is what we would consider good practices. Since, you know, the intent is to have, under the current medical use, you know, having these operations growing within permits that meet the intent of protecting the environment, you know, I would see the benefit of, you know, a couple of shining examples if you ever come across those.
I do have some we have some cultivators that are voluntarily, you know, they're enrolling. They're asking us to come out to their sites. I'll see if we can get some photos because I was planning on updating our website. And so I agree with you. Okay. It's different also saying please place erosion control measures and showing a photograph is so much more powerful.
Exactly. So thank you for answering my questions, and I know from the corner of my eye that Mr. Johnston has one more question.
Yeah, just a suggestion. I know you're in contact with the Santa Cruz County process, which involves all of the competing grower coalitions in Santa Cruz County. I'm aware from, I forget her name, the woman, the assistant county administrator who's shepherding that process, that there is a process going on in Monterey County, working on an ordinance. I think it's a reflecting the differences between Santa Cruz and Monterey County. It's a very different process. I think they're working with a lot of ag folks to develop the ordinance. But still, in contact with the people who are either growing or interested in growing there. I'm also aware that there is an attorney who's been working on pulling together grower coalitions in San Luis Obispo, San Benito, and one other county. I can certainly give you his contact information. I'm not sure what's going on in Santa Barbara County, but it just strikes me that where the counties are working on these ordinances, and it's probably more the counties than the cities in terms of the rural mm-hmm. stuff, that they are probably, for the most part, in contact, you know, are seeking contact with the people who are trying to follow that process. And the region has been dealing, you know, quite closely with all the counties as our changes in our stormwater permits have required all of the counties to revise their county codes. So we've probably already got relationships with people in the land use part of each of these counties, that it wouldn't be too hard to find out who they're talking to, mm-hmm. To get the sort of, it's the corollary to the 20,000 foot survey, you know, the ground level survey. So I'd be happy to give you that contact info, but I would also suggest that the folks who have been working on the stormwater stuff in this region have probably got contacts in all of the counties if not the folks, the cubicle mates of the folks who are working on this ordinance stuff, because it's land use and it's revising the county land use codes.
Well, I will say that if you provide me with a contact, I will ask Ms. McCann to, if she wants me to coordinate with any of her staff first, I will contact them and meet with them and discuss our program. But I'd like to do it in concert with Region 3 staff.
Yeah.
The resources that we're hoping for are not in place. So if I do anything that jumps ahead of that, I want to make sure that I have
your staff's
Well, and as a region, we have an interest in you getting a very complete picture of the scope of the problem of the issue in this region, because mm-hmm. we frankly, you know, we don't want to be understaffed on it. You know, we want to be able to really document what the need is.
Okay. I think you've just reestablished that mapping priority. I think I need to jump on that, because there is going to be that discussion in the very, you know, very near future of where positions go.
Thank you very much. Did you want to add anything?
Well, I just feel compelled to acknowledge that, as Erin mentioned, she's one water resource control engineer. She's in the process of hiring one more, and we have zero resources for this. Nevertheless, we are starting to coordinate. We've had a couple conversations. We've had some good input from board members, and the information that Mr. Johnston just spoke about, he's given to me as well, and we do have an internal plan. And I was the staff person who was going to be working on this month in my section manager role, and so now there's nobody. But we can provide some staff and small bits in the very immediate term to help Erin with that work, and hopefully, because it is important to be able to present the need we have for the resources so that we can actually go forward and implement the program in conjunction with Office of Enforcement.
And we'll discuss that a little bit more as part of a budget item, which is coming next. So let's see. I want to thank you very much for coming today.
Thank you for having me. Yes. Thank you for your comments and questions.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Aaron. And our next item, please.
I wanted to check what's your pleasure. It's item 13 would be next in order. We could do the executive officer's report first.
I would prefer the budget next.
Okay. And what about a possible break? You want to think about
3
that?
3 o'clock. Why don't we make it a short break of 10 minutes? Okay. So let's come back at 3:10. Thank you. Okay.